Hey guys, what's up? On this episode of Drugs and Stuff, Dave Crossland and I are going to, first of all, we're going to do an update on the situation with the Raws coming out of China. After that, we're going to talk about Masteron, Proviron, and their ability to free up test. Then microdosing of test and other gear. We've got SARMs as an injectable. How beneficial is that? And then after that, I'm going to ask Dave about his New Year's resolutions. That's all coming up next on Drugs and Stuff. Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Dave Crossland, Happy New Year to you, man.
You too, and Happy New Year to everyone that's listening. Hope you had a good Christmas and all that shit. time for New Year's resolutions, eh?
Yes. Yeah. And I would love to talk a little bit about that, but before we do, I'm sitting on the edge of my seat, anxiously awaiting your update on the UGL raw powder situation. You told me on text that there is an update. What have you heard so far?
Not telling you.
That's it. All right. Well, guys, hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. See you later. There's several companies, and this is what was happening very early. Several companies are coming forward and saying, we're not doing it anymore. We're stopping. Yeah. We're out. As the dust has settled a little bit, there's a couple of companies popped up and go, no, business is normal.
Really?
We'll carry on going as long as we can. And there's quite a few now saying it's going to be disrupted till about February. Then after February, it should be back to normal.
No kidding.
Huh. But I know labs have been a bit of a fluster and have been looking around. And apparently there's some decent sources opened up in India anyway.
Okay.
But I've already seen a couple of labs put the prices up.
Okay. I've heard that too.
And I know one's planning on putting the prices up. I spoke to a lab the other week. We were talking about it just in general. I said, have you put your prices up? He says, no. I said, I've got enough raw in. He's only a small volume lab.
Okay.
He said, I've got enough raw in to do the year. So he says, I'm fine. He says, but He's actually decided he's getting out of it once he's done this year.
Okay.
Well, once he's done the raw he's got, he's just not going to bother anymore. He's not ordering any more in now, so it'll be done from what he's got. But he said, I don't understand labs putting the prices up. I said, why? He said, because the raws they got at the old prices.
Of course they did.
Yeah, but they're going to need to offset for buying the new, and I think a lot at the moment just don't know what it's going to cost them.
Sure. Well, not to mention, too, people are just quick to make a buck when they can, right?
Oh, of course, yeah.
So, and you mentioned you got in contact with that growth hormone company.
Ansenum. They've changed all their packaging, and they're not saying why.
Huh.
I don't know if it's anything to do with what's gone on.
Okay.
They say they're still supplying. But I'm wondering now if because this is something else, it's difficult because obviously the English isn't the best and my Chinese is terrible.
Okay.
I mean, my Chinese goes as far as a number six and a number seven with fried rice. That's it. So, but there's a few sort of said stuff like, we'll go black market now.
Oh, really?
So what I think is what they're referring to, and I might have got two and two and made 50 million here, but I think previously their manufacture of raws to be exported over here was done legitimately through their businesses more than we probably realized.
Okay.
And now there's this export ban. What they're doing now is they're just going to do it illegitimately.
Okay. Why not?
This could explain why Ansenum have changed its packaging.
Hmm.
Because obviously their product is a pharma product that's sold in hospitals, well, used in hospitals over in China.
Yeah.
So if they're now going to satisfy an illicit market illicitly,
yeah,
then they may want to differentiate between the two products.
Oh, that would make sense.
It's a bit grasping at straws, but it's the only thing I can think of as to why they would change the packaging.
Yeah, yeah.
But they say they're continuing.
Okay.
I think we'll have to see if they're going to still continue with the "we guarantee delivery" and, you know, if it doesn't show up, we'll send you again attitude, or if that's going to change because they're getting hammered more over their end.
Okay.
But, I got a message from a lab the other day, and they just sent me a screenshot of a message from their Chinese supplier. We're still going.
Oh, interesting. Well, there you go.
He said that. So, yes, I think there's going to be disruption. Yes, I think it's going to be a bit up in the air for a month or two, but it does sound like it will settle back down to some degree.
Yeah. I don't think anybody or most people were like ready for things. They didn't think it was going to shut down. I know that now, you know, through the back end of the website and of the YouTube page, I can see where people link the show. And we were actually, that episode that we released was linked in a few different gear related message boards. And so I got to look at a few conversations that people were having on the topic. And I had heard in a few situations that prices had been hiked up. I also heard from a couple listeners on DM that prices were hiked up through their sources, first through SARMs, and then second through, you know, the UGL, actual steroids. And then I've heard of many people chattering, just saying that they didn't think it was going to amount to much. So people who seem to have a lot of posts and seem to be in the know, I don't, you know, not people I knew in particular, but
it seems to have, it seems to have wiped out a couple of big players, but they seem to be more legit almost. Whereas the ones that were already a bit dodgy are just continuing to be dodgy.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas some of the ones that were a bit more legit seem to have stepped back and gone, no, we're not, you know, we don't need the grief.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you were a dodgy lab to begin with, you were probably already doing things that you didn't want so the point was, for anybody who hadn't seen the previous episode, what Dave had said was that they were changing regulations on the production of SARMs in China due to carbon dioxide, CO2 emissions. So police were going to be coming around, or officials were going to be coming around, making sure they weren't producing SARMs that were no longer needed to be produced. And then in turn, that meant that they wouldn't be able to do other things like produce illicit raw powders. So if these companies were already doing stuff that they didn't want the law to see, you know, I don't know why that would change anything, you know, with a new regulation, well, right?
Yeah, I mean, the regulation was a ban on exportation, which included now SARMs. But the theory or the story was that it was going to be heavily enforced. And the reasons for that were CO2 emissions, but also pressure from the international athletics, and because the Olympic Games are going there shortly and all the rest of it. So it was as more and more got revealed, it seemed to be that it was just, I mean, they've hammered China for years.
Yeah.
China got shit when they had the Olympic Games over here. And it did disrupt the supply a little bit for a couple of weeks.
I remember that.
So they've hammered it for years, and sort of it just sounded like China had finally gone, right, fair enough, you know what, we'll do something about it.
And it seems like, though, if they do, it would really be a first time, because so far it seems like China's just always like, tell everybody what they want to hear and then do what the fuck we want, you know?
Yeah, they have a, culturally, they have a very driven sort of ethos with work and moving forward and being successful, and it seems to be a little bit at whatever cost sort of thing. So,
yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, it'll all pan out in the end of the day. There is going to be some disruption. We've seen some price hikes, and I suspect there'll be a little bit of disruption with quantity and supply for a while, but it does look now that it's not the storm we thought it was going to be, and it's more of a bit of a windy day.
Okay. I've got another question that I wanted to ask you. Now, just the other day, I saw a couple posts calling out a company, a gear company. I believe that I don't know enough about them to say, you know, where they're out of, but I do know that they distribute in the U.S. called, I believe, the Research Station. And these guys, you know, without saying too much more about the company itself, the issue was they were seeing vials that had almost like a gel in it. There was like some sort of gooiness inside of the vials. And so basically they were getting called out. And this is something that's been, this is news that's been spreading.
This sounds like stuff's crashing.
Now that's what I said too, but cause it, I mean, before,
hang on.
Sure.
You mean like that?
It,
sort of gluey, that, globuly.
Now that would be like it's been sitting there for a long time. But now, if that was just beginning to happen, it would kind of be floating amongst the rest of the oil, right?
That happened within a week.
Okay, yeah, because that's I've seen it. I spoke to somebody, the person who had sent me the original, who sent me the videos on Instagram. I said it looks like it was starting to crash because I've seen stuff crash. Before it turns into crystals, turn into a gelatinous.
This is never fully crystalline. This has stayed as a gooey, sort of like half glue consistency.
Yeah. But now that said, that was my first thought. Research Station, I guess somebody hopped on there and they said that it was rancid oil. They said that they received their drums, their grapeseed oil in like 55-gallon drums. And that they had a batch of rancid oil, and that there's a bunch of stuff that is contaminated. So I figured I'd throw that out there, but it kind of threw me for a loop because, like I said, it looked to me like it was just not stabilized. You know,
I've seen there was maybe the oil has something to do with it. I don't know, but that came from what was a fairly reputable lab.
Okay.
And they just had an issue with cold temperatures causing the gear to crash.
Okay, so this is on Nick World Class, and this is a message. Let me see if I can pull it up here, and I'll play it for you, an audio message.
We are aware of the Sustanon, we're aware of the Primo, we are aware of the Prope, we're aware of the Meglin blend. And we know that there is a bunch more out there that is giving people problems. So I don't know what has been told you guys already, but what we have narrowed this down to is that the USP oil that they were using, their carrier oil, grapeseed oil, many of you guys probably know this. Some of you guys have been in the business a little while and are a little smarter than others. But when large manufacturers like this, like STR, they purchase everything in bulk. So their carriers come in giant 55-gallon drums, man. 55 gallons of the shit at a time. All right, so everything that they made with that last batch of oil, the oil when they received it was fucking rancid, okay? And they did not test it before they started making their products, before they, you know, started using it to produce stuff. So we have no idea how much of that is contaminated. And STR has not exactly been snappy with their responses to our inquiries about what's going on. Now, I don't want you guys to lose confidence, man, because we are busting our asses, man.
That's what I had heard about this, at least. But then it kind of, like I said, man, I was with you. That was my first thought, was it looked from this video that I had seen. It was like a clear gel floating in it. It looked like it was in an early stages of crashing. But you're saying you've seen it crash and just stay in a gel form, not even turn into final crystals.
Yeah. Which that stuff's probably well over a year now.
Okay.
And you'll put it in the oven and it will heat up fine.
Yeah.
And inject fine.
Yeah.
And cause no issues like increased pip or anything like that. I would have thought if a carrier oil was rancid, that there would be some quite painful consequences to that.
I would imagine so too. Plus, I've seen rancid oil before, and it's no longer, the oil itself is no longer, it's cloudy.
Yeah, it goes pretty colors.
Yeah, I've seen rancid oil, and when I've seen it, it has been, it's looked cloudy to, like, from the start. Like, you would know when you were making it. You'd be like, oh, something's wrong with this, you know, just by visually inspecting it.
I mean, I spoke to the guy that made it.
Yeah.
Because I'd got it sent, and I said, "Oh, yeah, send me. You know, wouldn't mind seeing what's going on with that."
Yeah.
Because they were saying, "No, you're staying in this gel. It's not going. It's not crystalline." And I spoke to him, and he said he had no idea. It just seemed to be one batch.
Huh.
And he'd offered to replace it for everybody that had an issue with it, but it all seemed to go back into suspension when it was heated up. It all seemed to inject quite fine, and it didn't seem to be causing any issues, but he had no idea what was causing it, and he couldn't narrow it down.
Hmm.
He said his first thought was that maybe the raw was, for some reason, overdosed, and so it was too high a concentration to sit stable.
Okay.
But he said he just couldn't get to the bottom of why. And that's test E. So it's not like it's DHB or something that's prone to crashing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just a standard test E.
Huh.
But he never got to the bottom of what actually caused it, and it never happened again.
Huh. I'll be damned. Yeah, I just figured I'd throw that out there. It was something that just kind of was brought to my attention.
The thing is, I would have thought if it was rancid oil, though you can't really blame the lab to a degree, that would be more off-putting.
Wait, what? Say that again?
If I wouldn't have been very forward at saying it was rancid oil.
No.
That's going to be even more off-putting than just, look, we've got a batch that keeps crashing. We don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding, man, because, you know, I think back. I talked one time on an episode of Muscle Minds. We had Lats, who is one of the moderators, longtime moderators and founders of Professional Muscle, which, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with Professional Muscle. Mm-hmm. They have, it's a source board. They have a lot of different sources available there that advertise through the board. And they keep tabs on them. They have people that will randomly buy products from these companies and then have them tested. They don't know that they're sending them to somebody that's testing it. They just think they're sending it to another customer. They keep tabs. They keep check, make sure that everybody's delivering properly. Anyway, he had said he was talking about one particular brand, Genotech. I guess what he was telling me about Genotech was that Genotech runs small batches because of that, because he said the only way that he can keep control of quality is by keeping the batches small to begin with.
Mm. I know a few labs that do that, and as it happens, they're all highly regarded labs.
Yeah.
The small operations, only really known. It's one of them, you know it if you know it sort of thing. They don't advertise, they don't push it widespread, they keep their volume down, and they just make small production runs so they can keep on top of quality and control.
Yeah, that's, and so I know that in the case with this lab, they run out, and once they're out, they'll be out for a while, you know. Mm-hmm. But once they're out, you also know that they're not trying to, that you got to wonder sometimes when a company has every product available all the time, nothing ever runs out. You really, I mean, you as a customer, that sounds great, but you really do have to wonder after a while, you know, like you've seen, Dave, we've looked right at the lab work that you've shown us, that there has been many circumstances where, hey, we're out of Masteron. That's fine. We'll replace it with something else, you know?
Yeah. It happens all the time, you know, and there's also just human error at the end of the day. You know, you just weighed it incorrectly.
Sure.
You got your formula mixed up. You thought you were doing 2 liters of tests instead of 1 liter, or you know, vice versa, or whatever, and you've just dosed it wrong.
Yeah.
So, and at the end of the day, though, the raw supplies generally do seem to be there or thereabouts within a few percentage when it comes to purity.
Yeah.
No one's testing the raws.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, so there is that unknown element. You know, the raw could just be garbage in the first place. I don't think it's common.
Yeah.
And I think most poor gear is down to the lab either deliberately or accidentally causing a problem. Probably in more cases deliberately than anything else.
Hmm.
But particularly when you get these blends that have 5 or 6 different ingredients in it, it's just so easy to just miss one off.
Sure. I saw a lab. Well, I won't say I saw. Somebody I know, Dave, some guy I know who did his last contest prep in 2017. was using Halo at the very end of his prep. He bought a bottle of Halo. It was supposed to have 50 tabs at 10 milligrams. And he thought to himself, wow, 50 tabs at 10 milligrams, that's going to be more than you, more than he needs. Okay. He received this little bottle, and it was from the company I just mentioned, who has high quality standards. The bottle was filled to the top with these little tiny tablets. It turned out, we found out later, he found out later that they had filled their tab bottles by weight, and whoever was filling the bottles had not calibrated it properly, and they had a whole run that there was like 300 tablets in this bottle.
Expensive mistake.
Yeah, it was like 310 tablets or something. I was like, wow, that's a yeah, lifetime supply for some people, yeah, of Halo.
For Halo, yeah. Yeah. It's going to last a very long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's all sorts of problems can go on at the end of the day. But I think the vast majority is deliberate.
Yeah.
It might not be because they're looking to rip people off, but more looking to meet demand.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that the vast majority of adulterated steroids is deliberate.
I'm seeing that more and more. I'm seeing that more and more now, especially seeing the things you've produced, the lab work that you've shown us and stuff. It's crazy.
Hey, what's up, guys? I wanted to do a really brief pause here from this podcast, from this episode of Drugs and Stuff, to do two things. Of course, it's shout out our sponsor and a shout out Dave Crossland. So number one, I want to make this ad for True Nutrition almost like a mini PSA. And, you know, here's what I'm going to talk about. I've had a few people, a good handful, actually, that I've talked to recently about intra-workout carbs. You know, I've talked about my intra-workout shake. I do highly branched cyclic dextrin along with EAA and some citrulline malate. Here's the thing. That EAA is a key element. And a lot of people I've found seem to be leaving that out. They just use the carbohydrate. And the carb is all well and good, and it will make you feel more pumped and give you more energy, but it's awesome to have that EAA in there. Basically, that's already like ready to, it's pre-digested pretty much. It's the raw elements of a protein. It's already broken down. You just need to absorb it through your stomach into your bloodstream and then send it to the muscle with that highly branched cyclic dextrin or whatever carb you're using. So I just wanted to remind you guys, throw that in there, not BCAA, you know, EAA, that's what you want to use. I used to use Pepto-Pro, but I found that EAA is cheaper and it's great. It's really effective. So that's the route that I'm going to go. And it's a route that I'd suggest you guys to go to. Of course, you guys can get all these things, plus a lot of high quality other supplements from TrueNutrition.com. And if you use our code ADVICES, you will get a discount. Plus, you will let them know that you support our programming. Plus, if you order in bulk, I believe it's over 5 pounds. Don't quote me on that, but that's what I believe it is. Then you get another 5% off. So you can rack up the savings by combining our code with a bulk order. All right, guys. The other thing I'm going to mention is Dave Crossland. He's ramping up with his nutrition coaching in 2020. And you guys can reach out to him if you are interested. Go to crosslands.org.uk. And if you and Dave are, you know, good fit for working together, then he would be happy to work with you. So reach out and talk to him and, you know, check it out today. All right, guys, let's get back to this episode.
Hey, listen, I've got a bunch of questions. I put out a thread last night. Guys, if you want to take part, we've gotten a few questions lately. That people who want to ask questions for the show, we have a group over at Facebook. It's the Advices Radio group. We also had another question. Are these shows available on audio only format? And yes, they are. You can go to advicesradio.com or you can go to Advices Radio on any podcast app. You could download all these shows. We're on like 40 episodes now, Dave, of the Drugs and Stuff podcast. But I put out a thread last night. We got a bunch of questions lined up here. And I'll start out with one. This is a similar question that was asked on the Blood, Sweat, and Gear podcast. A little bit different. Somebody was asking about the anti-E effects of Masteron versus Primo. But here's a question, semi-related, and this is from Matt. He says, exactly how effective is the use of Proviron and or Masteron really at freeing up testosterone? There is a theory out there that Proviron in particular has the ability to boost the effects of any gear you use. I fall into this camp, by the way.
Well, Proviron binds with SHBG. So sex hormone binding globule, or SHBG, binds to sex hormones.
Yeah.
So that's progesterone, that's estrogen, and that's androgens. It binds to them all. So if an androgen is bound to SHBG, then it's not free-floating, it's inactive, and it can't trigger a receptor. Breviron binds to SHBG, allowing a higher level then of free sexual hormone to flow around in the bloodstream. So you end up with higher levels of free hormone, which means you have more availability for receptors.
Hmm.
In theory, I've never seen it actually measured, but in theory, the use of Proviron should increase estrogen and progesterone as well as free-flowing androgens.
Yeah.
But SHBG does tend to bind to androgens more than it does estrogen or progesterone. So Proviron as an agent to increase free hormone, yes, it does. How impacting that is on the end results of a cycle, I'm not that convinced it has a great deal of impact. I think what it does do is have more of an impact on how you feel.
Okay.
So I think you will feel slightly better with Proviron in. And it is an antiestrogen as well. So obviously you got a little bit of a double kick there, though it's not a particularly efficient one. So if you look at the scale of each, we've got letrozole, we've got Adex, we've got aromacin, as in your actual AIs, and you're going to see Proviron below that. So, you know, it's a very mild in its action. But yeah, I think it may improve how you feel on cycle, particularly with libido and things like that. But I don't think you're going to see a significant impact in anabolic effect on muscle building tissue. It'd be nice to actually see a study, but then again, you're not really going to see a study because you're dealing with people and training and everything. There's so many variables, you're never going to have a true comparable.
Sure. I can tell you I used Master on at one point, just at a low dose. I want to say it was like 100 milligrams twice a week, and that my free test was through the roof. Like just through the roof. I can't remember how high it was, but it was like ridiculous, you know. And it was just at a small dose. So
yeah, I mean, mass has a similar effect as does Proviron. So they're both useful for increasing free androgen levels. And obviously, mass has an anti-estrogenic property as well. I think if you're sort of low dosing your test, then you could get away with mast only as your estrogen control. But once you start getting into big numbers, yeah, it ain't going to cut it. And I don't think it matters how much you use, it ain't going to cut it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what the guys were saying about blood, sweat, and gear too, that you wouldn't want to really rely on it as an anti-estrogen, no. You know?
If you're running a low test base, say 200, 250, 300 mg a week, you could potentially get away with 400-500 mg Masteron against that and run no AI.
Yeah.
But when you start getting into half a gram, 750 a gram, forget it. It's not going to cut it. And it doesn't matter if you ran 2 gram of Mast, it's still not going to cut it.
Yeah. And you know what I've always thought is, and I've used both Proviron and Masteron, but my thought had always been, why not use, if that was your goal, that why, you know, to say bind up SHBG and have more free tests, why not just use Masteron? Because you're going to get more of an anabolic effect. Like, you're not going to build muscle necessarily with Proviron. You know, you can get a harder, drier look, I think. But I feel like for me, Masteron's more bang for the buck.
Yeah, I mean, because you've got an anabolic there as well as this capability of tying up SHBG. But it depends as well on how far you want to push your overall dosages.
Okay.
So if you want to stay in a low dose and make it as efficient as you possibly can, and I suppose there's impacts from the feel good factor that you're probably going to get off it as well. You know, you feel more positive, you're going to be more positive, and all that sort of stuff. So there's probably a bit of a placebo impact there as well. I mean, the only time where I would say it really comes in would be when you were trying to limit your overall intake and just get as much as you can out of it. But like with a lot of things, I mean, last week when we spoke to Scott about the interest stuff, in the big picture, there are probably far more impacting areas of what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
That are restricting your growth or your results than messing around with a bit of a viral.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
Makes a cycle expensive as well. It's not the cheapest of drugs.
Yeah, is Proviron legal in the UK? Like, is it prescribed over there?
I believe it is available. In fact, I'll tell you in 2 seconds.
Okay, because I can tell you in the US, it's not a prescribed drug over here. We don't use it in the US at all.
T3 is not prescribed over here, or very rarely prescribed over here.
But you can't. You're kidding me. They just go to what, T4?
T4, yeah.
Wow. Huh. That's odd, man. Yeah, T3s. I mean, I know a lot of people who've been prescribed T3 over here.
Right now. Alphabetical. M. This is the prescription listing.
Yeah, I don't think it still is. I'm gonna look at GoodRx while you're doing that.
Yeah, we need to be talking because people are watching this as well. Yeah. So, what's your New Year's resolution, Scott?
Well, I feel like you almost have it, but I just looked it up. Proviron is not available in the U.S. I just wanted to double check. They have we have this app called GoodRx. If you're in the U.S. and you need to get prescriptions, especially if you don't have insurance or if you have shitty insurance, check out the app. Obviously, we get no kickback for it. I'm not advertising a product that we sell, but GoodRx. Yeah. Use the code advices. No.
Yes.
It's great though. You can save so much money with this app. Like you could take a prescription that might have been a couple $100 and knock it down to 70. You know, you could take a prescription that was $30 and knock it down even further.
No, it would appear it's not listed, but just give me 1 second. See, live research as we are online is amazing, isn't it?
And I'll give you an idea here. Now, you could get a 90-day supply of finasteride for like $100 or so, it looks like, at some places. The best offer they have is at Kroger Pharmacy for $6 for a 90-day supply.
I had someone who had an estrogen level of 26.
Yeah?
And was getting gyno.
Okay.
Because he was hammering finasteride so much.
No kidding. So he was
no fucking DHT. So as a result,
yeah,
he was amazingly susceptible to it.
I could see that because it's about the balance at that point, right?
Well, DHT has a protective action at the nipple, so DHT actually helps with preventing gyno in a normal person.
Yeah.
So if you lower DHT too low, then no, I can't find it. So it would look all like right. It's not. If you lower DHT too low,
yeah,
then the result of that is basically that you'll be very susceptible to gyno.
Maybe I just thought Proviron was legal was used in the UK because the first time I bought it was from a guy in the UK.
I will have a look at my other prescription book and see if it's listed in there. But the new edition is a real twat to work with. It's not easy to follow.
Yeah.
So it's not the easiest one to look things up in. The older edition is much more simpler to find stuff in. So I'll have a look in the old edition and see if I can find it in there.
Okay. Let's see here. Next question we had. We'll go to this one. Thoughts on microdosing test daily rather than one large shot weekly? Dave, I know we've talked about this topic before, but
I'm in a bit of conflict about this.
How's that?
Well, I used to be a great one for TRT, one shot, a fortnight, job done.
Yeah.
And then what I started to notice was that because you were at such an elevated period for the first 4 or 5 days, in order to not be absolutely on your ass at the end of the fortnight, that it ended up causing issues with, particularly with red blood cell count. So moving to a more frequent shot with TRT made more sense, but there's a trade-off. And it would depend on the ester. From what I can... When blood plasma levels of drugs start to stabilize and become very consistent, then the body can start to increase the clearance rate, effectively shortening the half-life.
Okay.
So if you're going to run everyday injections, you need to make sure it's a fast-acting ester as fast as possible, because if you run every directions with a slow acting ester, your bloods are going to be so stable, the chances are you're actually going to end up effectively reducing the dose.
Okay.
But I've seen some quite impressive stuff with like TRT administered from test base on a daily basis.
No kidding.
Or, you know, incredibly fast acting esters, so that it keeps more in line with our natural peaks in the morning and everything else.
Oh, I could see that. Yeah. It would be a pain in the ass, though. Why not at that point go to like a cream, you know?
Quite literally.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen guys that just do. So if you're only using a microdose and you're doing TRT, it's not going to be much, you know, much oil, but. I mean, I wonder, what about just going to like a cream or, you know, some type of a topical at that point? Because I can tell you, and I know when we talked about this before, one of the things I mentioned was a guy that I know, Adam Lamb. He has a TRT organization here in the U.S. Where he can like prescribe, he could get doctors in your area, stuff like that, and help you find TRT. They're a really big fan of using a topical now. And the reason he said that is because it does act more like you just said. It's more like your natural fluctuation, that for an older male, you're going to have, you know, one long, slow, steady line, versus for a younger male, you're going to get fluctuation on a daily basis. And the cream would be more likely to do that.
Yeah. I mean, the only downside to cream is transference.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously bioavailability can be a bit tricky. Depending on the individual. But going back to a cycle, I wouldn't recommend microdosing, no. I always like to build in a little bit of irregularity.
Yeah, you've said that before. So what's your reasoning on that?
Just to keep things, it's almost like marching and then every 10 step doing one at a time. So the body's constantly having to try and adjust and doesn't start to get comfortable and start to upregulate the clearance. You have a little bit of a conflict as well, because when you look at peak blood levels, they're going to be much, much higher on a single dose shot.
Sure.
And there are some studies on orals showing that single dosing is far more effective because of that increased peak blood value.
Because your levels, if say I'm taking... Let's even say D-ball. Let's say I take all my D-ball at once before I train versus taking it split up 3-4 times a day. That level, although it may not stay that elevated through the day, I am going to hit a higher peak than I would ever have hit splitting it up, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, so let's convert it into NMOL and say that 50 mega D-ball is going to give you 60 NMOL.
Okay.
If you do it in one hit, that's its peak. But if you split that into 4 doses of 15, you never get over 20.
Yeah.
Or 25, which is still sort of keeping you, well, it's keeping you in range. So there is some argument for high single doses, higher increased peak, higher results to a point. And this is obviously this where you get this little bit of a negative curve where the higher the dose, the more stressors and the more problems you get coming the other way that start to impact your progress.
Yeah.
But splitting the dose up is definitely useful if you find you're getting stress reactions or you're getting immune system responses from using your gear. And it can help manage the sides much easier if you split the dose up. So it's a bit of a mix. So what I tend to do is I'll build most traditional cycles. I'll build my compounds with two or three injection days a week.
Yeah.
But I'll have one compound that is shot on a single day.
Okay.
So I've got that little irregularity going in all the time just to keep everything continually responding.
Now, the one thing, and I mentioned this last time we discussed this, the one thing where I would not want to do it would be if you're experiencing side effects, you know? I
found obviously. Yeah.
You know, that would be it, though, you know? Especially what?
Yeah, especially when you start looking at the more toxic compounds. You know, I mean, it's that old age-old argument about, do I take Tren Ace or do I take Tren E? Well, if you take Tren E, the build-up's going to be slower, so you're probably not going to feel the size hit you like a sledgehammer, but then when they do hit you, you're going to be well in on it, and unfortunately, they've probably been there for a while, and you're going to have more of a problem dealing with it and getting rid of them.
Yeah.
Where if you go Tren A, they're going to hit you hard and fast, but you can get them out and deal with it quicker. So it's that catch-22 that you always have with that situation. So, yes, definitely on the more harsher compounds, I'd be very reluctant to do a single dose. I tend to run – I'm not a big test user. Well, I wasn't. I was, but when I write cycles, I tend not to use huge amounts of test.
Okay.
So I'll put test in – as a single shot, say 400, 250, 300, 500, whatever we're
really
running at.
Okay.
And then I'll do my other compounds Monday, Wednesday, Friday or something like that.
Huh. All right. Interesting. It'd be something worth looking at. I've never done it that way. I went the other direction where I started out following the message boards when I started. And then I, you know, which would be testy or test sip two times a week type thing. And then I found that when I would get
Thursday, like everyone does.
Exactly. And then when I found that I got more side effects, then I found splitting things up more worked well. And then I just kept going toward that, you know, was like more frequent. But you know what though? I could see the other direction, you know, for sure. Just something to be careful with.
You've just got to play it around how you respond. You know, I mean, I was always a bugger for getting test flu.
Every
fucking cycle.
Yeah.
But I used to just ride it out, and I knew in 3-4 weeks it would come right. So for the first 3 or 4 weeks of any cycle, I used to feel like absolute shit. And that's when I started. And so I was always, you know, spacing out my injections. But then I got to a point where I was using that much, I had no choice but to space out my injections.
Right.
Because I'm shoving that much fucking oil in. You've got to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, literally, at the highest level of my uses, I injected every day.
Yeah.
And it was just to split the doses up because there was so much going in.
How much oil was that per day then on an everyday basis?
At my peak, I was touching in the region of 3 mil a day.
And that's when you got to be 415 pounds, I assume.
Yeah. In retrospect, I ran 3 gram a test and 2 gram a deca was probably the main productive cycle.
Wow. That's a lot of deca.
Threw a few oxys in there periodically.
Yeah.
But I did sort of stage it. So I did gram and a half, 2.
Okay.
And then I jumped to 3. And I tolerated that quite well to a point. So up to about 14 weeks, cracking.
Okay.
Continual progression, felt good, felt strong. Then after 14 weeks, I started to feel a little bit shit.
Okay.
Picked up a couple of niggles. Training was a bit hit and miss. And that was just a point where I'd been on too long, you know? And I should have come off at that point. I didn't. I ended up running for about another 4 weeks, I think, before I did actually come off. And then the second time round, it was an absolute fucking disaster for various reasons. And I ended up being stupid doses for fucking way too long. Because I was plagued with injuries, so I was like, well, I won't come off, bro. I'll drop back down. And then it was like, oh, I feel like I'm getting better. I'll bring it back up. And then it came back, dropped back down. And hey, before you knew it, there was 6 months gone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, I've been on, you know, quite high doses for extended periods of time.
Yeah, yeah.
I think in any cycle, there's a point, and it depends on the person. It depends on how their diet is and how their training is and how their lifestyle is and genetics for the tolerance of drugs. There's a point where the cycle stops becoming productive.
Yeah. It's finding that line without just, because we're used to just continually pounding our head against the wall until we break through is what we assume is going to happen in bodybuilding, but it rarely does, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I used to always run a sort of idea was one shitty workout, pull your head out your ass, sort it out. Two shitty workouts. Come on. You really need to give yourself a talking to.
Yeah.
When I got to three, right, and that's absolutely, I need to review.
Yeah, yes.
What, why have I had three shitty workouts in a row? Because you always get one, just way of life.
Right.
But I used to be so pissed off about having a bad one that I made sure the next one was made up for it, sort of thing.
Right.
But you do come to a point where toxicity and stress on the body and everything else starts to become counterproductive. You can, to a point, out-drug it, but it's not really the best place to be, and you're starting to ask for problems.
Okay, so speaking of drugs then, first of all, Keith Allen says, hey, he's watching live, and then Ryan Veal says, Jesus, does Dave have stock in Caber at that dosage of Deca? Is that something that, I mean, did you use a lot of Caber when you were at 2? Because that's a lot of Deca, man.
I used occasionally 0.5.
So not much then.
The one thing I've always had in my favor, I've always been incredibly resilient to drugs.
Okay.
And not in a sense that they don't work for me, just in a sense that I've always tolerated them and coped with them quite well. So even with such high doses of Deca and such high doses of Test, for the most part, I actually felt pretty good. That was what became UC1, the first film. The second film was a different ball game, different drugs, but also a different set of circumstances with injuries and stuff going on in the background as well. Hmm. And just sheer size starting to become a problem.
Hmm.
But I've never had... I got a few periods where things got a little bit substandard, shall we say, in that department. But never to a point where it became majorly problematic. Anyway, have you tried having sex when you're 365 and 400 pounds?
I've never been that heavy. Yeah.
It's a challenge.
Dave, So the heaviest I've gotten has been around 230. And for me, that was really heavy. Like it felt heavy. But here's the thing. I've talked to more and more people now that it's just a matter of that I wasn't used to it, you know, and it was like my first push up. And had I stayed at 230 for an extended period of time, I would have gotten more used to it. It would have become more solid. You know, it wouldn't have been such, I'm sure it was a watery 230, you know.
Two things. You need to maintain it so your body can adapt, and you need to start doing a bit of conditioning work.
Yeah.
And I think where a lot of people make mistakes, and I've done it myself, is where they don't get physically fit enough to carry the weight they're carrying.
I could see that.
So as you get bigger, depending on how you train, but as you get bigger, you need to start considering fitness work, conditioning work, so that you can carry that weight.
Sure.
So you can really function at that way. And I've gone through stages with like lower back pumps where I couldn't walk more than 10, 15 meters and I'd be absolute agony.
Yeah.
And you've just got to work through it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and give your body a chance to adapt. But it does take time and it can take a few months.
Yeah.
But then again, it's the downside of that in a way is that when you come the other side of that, and for most people go, well, why is this a downside? Well, when you want to drop the size, you can't.
Hmm.
So So I still sit at 350 pounds, eating next to fuck all and training like a girl. And it's like, I don't want to be this big anymore.
Yeah.
And it's a really struggle to drop it.
Because
I've held it for so long.
I've got one more question, and then I'm going to ask you about your New Year's resolutions. But question being about SARMs. Thoughts on injectable SARMs. Personally, I've never gotten anything out of SARMs besides trash lipid panels, but the injectable versions seem a bit intriguing. On a personal note, although not technically a SARM, I have received good benefits from 25 to 30 milligrams a day of YK11 without negative side effect on blood work, first of all, that surprises me because I feel like YK11 is like that's the strongest. And from what I've seen, a pretty intense SARM. I mean, I guess maybe it's not as bad as some of the things could have been on cholesterol possibly, but yeah,
it's a hybrid steroid. It's built on a steroid backbone is YK11.
Okay. Yeah. I what do you think, though? I've heard talk of injectable SARMs. I know Victoria is. Well, we talked to Victoria before. She's not a fan of SARMs. You know, she's in fact, and she said that the idea of a SARM was that these were supposed to be drugs that were put out. The idea was it was supposed to be taken orally, so you didn't have to take an injection. That was one of the benefits they were looking at for SARMs. And two, it was something you should only have to take one time a day. So this goes against what a SARM is.
And that they were wholly anabolic without being androgenic, and that they didn't cause shutdown, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right,
and
right.
And they never got one to work 100% successfully yet.
Yeah.
So they've got them where they've been selective in their action, so they would trigger anabolic action in the muscle when they wouldn't trigger anabolic action in the prostate, for argument's sake. But then they cause major shutdown. Or they've got ones where they're quite mild in their suppressive quality, but they're not selective in their action.
Yeah.
And most research labs, as far as I'm aware, as in actual pharmaceutical development of SARMs, has been dropped to a large extent.
That's what Victoria was saying too. That they
there's only a couple that they're sort of pushing through with, and even then, I think they're more looking at them in other treatments rather than what they were originally looking at, which was basically, you know, an anabolic agent.
Okay.
In theory, an injectable would be less, definitely you would probably get less stress on the liver, less stress on the stomach at least.
Okay.
I've seen people have great success with SARMs. In fact, I coached a lad who, for all intents and purposes, would have matched most people on a steroid cycle for his development when he was on SARMs.
Really? And lab work was okay with all this?
It was reasonable. It wasn't amazing, but okay. It wasn't terrible. And he wasn't on huge doses. I think his combined dose was 40 or 50 milligrams.
Okay.
Hmm. And he put something in the region of about 20 pounds on during the cycle.
Okay.
Obviously not all muscle, but there were significant muscular gains in there. Well, so much so that he decided he was never going to use steroids again.
Really?
But this is a kid that if you said, do that till you drop, he'd do it till he dropped.
Mm. So he decided he wasn't going to use steroids and then he used SARMs? Is that how it worked? Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. He used steroids in the past, though, be it under poor guidance and had a few problems. So he was a bit down on using gear and decided he wanted to try SARMs as an alternative that would be a bit milder on him.
Okay.
And had a very successful cycle with them. Yeah, very successful cycle with them. But like I say, he was one of the, his execution of things when you told him to do something was textbook.
Okay.
So, to be fair, I think if he just hadn't had the poor advice around his previous cycle, he would have gained massively off anything he used. He was one of them sort of kids.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like a lot of things, isn't it? It's horses for courses. They have their place. Just be aware of what you're using. Mm-hmm. A lot of people go into SARMs thinking that they're perfectly legal, which they're not, that they're nowhere near related to a steroid in any way, that they don't cause shutdown, that they can't be suppressive, that they're not toxic, and that it's just not true. So it's like anything, you know, it's you need to educate yourself. But they've got this reputation of being an alternative to steroids that don't cause any harm, that don't have any problems, and it couldn't be further from the truth.
I think also, too, you need to look at who is giving you the information. Sure. Because there are, you know, SARMs are something where it's okay. Like you said, they're not completely legal, but I don't know if they're kind of, I don't know if they're prosecuted against the way if, say, you were, if you have a website that's selling SARMs versus a website that's selling D-ball and Winstrel. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, so there's more people that are selling them. And I feel like that it's a lot of times those people that are going to tell you, SARMs are great, you know.
Well, that's part of the problem, isn't it? Because the websites are very much... I mean, in the UK, the sale of SARMs is not a criminal offence. It is a trading standards offence.
Okay, huh.
They are not legal to be sold as sports supplements. They are not allowed to be sold for human consumption. They are research drugs.
Okay.
So there was a company called Nucleus Peptides that got prosecuted last year, and they hammered him because he was actively promoting the use of SARMs as sports supplements.
Was this the guy that was that they hammered him on the GW? Yeah. So because he was selling Carterine, which they showed the paperwork that says it could be linked to cancer, they said that, and that's why they really hammered him, right? Because they were saying, you're selling something that's creating cancer in people, basically.
I think more than anything else was he'd had a couple of... What generally happens with trading standards is, it sounds a bit daft, but they'll come up and warn you first.
Yeah.
So they'll say, you know, don't do this. You're not supposed to do that. Sort your act out and give people time to correct what they're doing. And he didn't. He just ignored it and carried on. So I think they used the Carterine just more as a way of making him appear a really bad guy in all the press releases.
Oh, I see.
I mean, yes, I think they were, because obviously their knowledge will be very limited and very much based around what studies that can be shown. So, it definitely, there's an element to criminality, which I don't think people sometimes realize, and that's the intent behind it. And that's the character of the individual involved in it.
Okay.
So if you get two people committing the same offense, but one of them has been very supportive of his customers and has in general operated a very nice setup, it's just that he happens to be acting outside the realms of the law.
Yeah.
And the other one that's a complete fucking arsehole and doesn't give a shit about anybody and is just trying to rip people off, then the second guy will get a heftier sentence than the first guy, all things being equal.
That makes sense, yeah.
So it is reflected on. So obviously they use that to paint a particularly bad picture of this guy because he had been such an arrogant twat with trading standards. They really wanted to paint the worst picture they possibly could of it. And as a result, he got a very hefty sentence. I can't remember what it was now, but he got a very hefty sentence in comparison to what he'd been prosecuted for. But yeah, so in the UK, SARMs are legal for sale if they're not for human consumption and if they are for research purposes only. They tend to hammer you when you start openly promoting them as sports supplements.
Okay.
That's where, but because they are readily available online, as a result, people seem to think that they are perfectly viable, that they are perfectly legal, and that there's nothing wrong with them, and it's no different to going to your local supplement stores and buying a tub of whey.
I think there's a lot of people that buy them for that reason, too. You know, they feel that they're doing something safer for whatever reason, be it their own sense of morals or whatever, you know, that they're not breaking the law.
Yeah, I know people that will go to every compound under the planet, but they won't take that step into anabolics.
Yeah.
So they'll use SARMs, they'll use peptides, they'll use growth hormone, they'd even consider insulin, but they wouldn't consider using steroids.
Sure.
Because to them, in their moral compass, that is wrong. You know, that's too much. So yeah, they sit in a niche and they do give a performance boost to a sort of niche market that's of people that want to stay within what they feel are legal and recommended supplementation. And obviously, no drug dealer turns around and says, the gear I'm selling is shit.
Right, right.
There wouldn't be a very good drug dealer if they did. So you speak to every steroid dealer, and the gear he's got's the best in the country, and it's super strong, and it's used by pros, and they've got labs to support it.
Yeah, they're used by pros. I remember that. I've had people tell me, I remember somebody saying, my stuff is used by DLB. That's like, right, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Man, I'm going to switch topics here then. I want to ask you about your New Year's resolutions. Do you make New Year's resolutions?
Historically, yes.
Okay.
And you get a lot of this time, you know, New Year, New Me, on all these bollocks, and people being very down on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, all right, but it is a natural period of time to reflect.
Sure.
It's the end of a period. It's the end of a year, so it's a natural time to reflect. And it's only natural upon reflection that you look at potentially mistakes you've made or plans that didn't go quite where you want them to be, and you look at maybe giving things a fresh start. You know, diets always start on Monday.
Yeah.
A new week. So I don't really get this bashing New Year, New Me. Whatever is a catalyst for you to improve yourself, whatever it is, it can only be a positive thing.
I agree. I agree with you.
Yeah, you get a bit fed of hearing it because you know they've got no intention. But I see that every day of every Facebook post anyway, you know. Fucking after every comp, oh, I didn't get where I want, but I'm going to smash the next one. And, you know, people are full of good intentions. So it's not an anomaly that's only available around the new year. It happens throughout the year. You just don't see the concentration of it in the same way.
I could agree with that. And I'm with you. I never used to set resolutions because I did feel like it was dumb, you know. But then when I looked deeper at it, Dave, I'll be honest. I think part of it was I was afraid to set a goal and not meet it. I think that was for me part of it.
Yeah. And I do set goals. And I do set goals around this time of year. Okay. May not literally be tonight or tomorrow, but because I do, it is a period of time where I get some downtime and get to take stock and reflect where I've gone with the business and what I want to do next year. I mean, at this point, it is very much same shit, different day.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things. I haven't got anything specific. I have some financial targets or more materialistic targets. You know, there's certain things I'd like to purchase possibly.
Okay.
But in general, no, it's just probably more try and actually get done what I've been threatening to do for the last 12 months.
Yeah.
Stick to a bleeding diet, stick to going to the gym and stupid stuff like that. It's more just a general lifestyle and just taking better care of myself, really. I haven't got anything I'm specifically aiming for. I'll continue to try and develop the corporate side of the business. But, you know, that's pretty much where I want to go.
Did you set any goals or resolutions this previous year that you have, that you're proud of having met? Because that's something we don't talk about a lot. You know what I mean? Usually we talk about, what are we doing now? What are we going to do? But then I always like to also reassess and be like, well, what did I do? You know?
I, funnily enough, actually only thought about this the other day.
Okay.
And if you'd have asked me what my New Year's resolutions were, I would have struggled to tell you. Because I can't really remember. But there were a few things. And yes.
Okay. Yes. Bring on.
Physique-wise, no.
Okay.
Definitely not physique-wise, but there was. I wanted to be in a different position with my police work, and I wanted to have a recognition within that field.
Okay.
I had some stiff opposition to me being involved in police work from certain factors within various police organisations within the UK.
Okay.
They have now gone.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a bonus.
I have, yeah.
Do you mean like you took care of them, Dave?
No.
Okay. I was going to say. I'm with you, Dave. You didn't do that.
No, I don't.
Didn't take care of anybody.
No, I don't know where he's gone. Accident, I believe. It's just more. I got criticized. Without going into too much detail, there's an operating system called the DAG, which is basically a email chain that the police expert witnesses use and the people that contribute to that network use. And I'd been heavily criticized on there by a couple of people. And as a result, it had caused some concern at various police forces whether I was someone of good character or reputable to work with.
Okay.
I'd also pissed off the National Crime Agency, which is the NCA. And their
with this podcast?
No. And their head honcho had deliberately set out to try and fuck me up.
Okay, really?
That blew up in his face. Quite dramatically, actually. But I didn't do anything in particularly special. I just carried on doing what I do and trying to do it to the best of my ability. As a result, I ended up being a guest speaker at the Drug Expert Witness annual conference, which was a big deal because it was that final, yes, you're accepted as a professional, yes, you're accepted as a professional at what you do.
Yeah.
Within all of the police organizations. So overcoming that bad press that I've had, and it was only a couple of individuals a little pissed off because I made them look twats in court. But overcoming that bad press that I have and establishing myself as being credible at what I do within those organizations was a goal for this year, and that is definitely something I have achieved.
Excellent.
Financially, yeah, I think I did all right. I don't really track that much, daft as it sounds.
Okay. But you're happy with where you are, though. Then I was wondering because I know that, you know, it's something I think it's important for all of us, especially, you know, somebody who's independent. It's not like you're trying to get that promotion. You know what I mean? You have to hustle up your own work, really, is what it comes down to. Just like myself.
One of the things I wanted to achieve this year was I wanted to get a motorhome.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I've managed that. Nice. So, and that's part of a bigger plan.
Okay.
So that's a step in a direction to a bigger plan that I hope to enact in the next 2-3 years.
Nice.
So
I've got a couple things that I want to do this next year. One of them is that I want to, of course, I want to grow the YouTube channel. So guys, speaking of which, if you haven't subscribed, please do. We're about to break 3K. So that's a start. It's still small potatoes compared to a lot of YouTube pages. But I will say this, that a lot of the people who watch us, they are really connected to what we do. A lot of the people that our audio following is much bigger than our video following is. This next year, Dave, I would like to grow the YouTube to match, if not exceed, our audio following. If we could do that, that'd be cool.
What you have is you have a very engaged audience.
I think we do too. Well, you do too. You're part of us, so.
But I think one of the things that, though you may not have huge numbers, the numbers that you have are very engaged with you.
We do. And I love that, you know. I would rather have a mom and pop that we can, you know, a mom and pop gym where we can know every member than a mass gym where everybody's just a number.
And I think that's one of the things you've got in that, you know, your engagement is very, very high, and where you might see people that have a million followers.
Yeah,
the engagement's probably 10,000 out of that million, whereas your percentage is a lot, lot higher.
That's what I'm trying to continue cultivating. Other thing I want to do, I want to talk publicly somewhere. I want to do that a couple times this year.
About what?
Well, one of the things I want to talk about is about podcasting, and it looks like I will have an opportunity to do that at least one time this year. I'm going to work on two opportunities to do that. So, because I do think that podcasting is 2020 is going to be a huge year for podcasting. I'm sure you've seen it, Dave. Everybody has one now, you know. Everybody who's a coach has their own podcast, it seems. There's a lot of good stuff out there, but you know, just like anything, that the more there is, the more watered down it can become, the more shit there is, and the harder it can be to be seen, I think. as a podcaster, you know, being, I'd consider myself a vet at this point, that, you know, it's something I feel like I could give people some good constructive feedback that could help them be a better podcaster and be able to better communicate to their audiences. So that's something I'd like to talk about. I also want to continue focusing on my nutrition work. You know, I never talk about it, Dave. Like I was telling you before the show, I never tell people that I coach, but, you know, I want to continue focusing on craft. It's the reason that I podcast, is so that I can learn from everybody, learn from you, learn from Scott Stevenson, and be better at what I do. And I'll tell you, last year, my goal was to start video podcasting. That was my goal for 2019. I wanted to start a video podcast. So I think we fucking nailed that one. We've completely transitioned. Everything's on video now. So, yeah.
And all right, personal stuff. Well, you as an individual, not work related.
That's tough, man. Because I feel like it's all. You know what I mean?
Are you finally gonna get the sex change, or have you not gonna leave that
NWA
yet?
Don't tell people about that, Dave. I want to continue growing my relationship with Victoria. You know,
it's sweet.
I want to continue working on that, because, you know, right now we are still like madly in love and we love spending all the time together. But, you know,
relationships are work. And if people say they're not, then they're fucking lying.
Yeah. So I want to put that work in now, as does she, so that it doesn't get stale ever, you know. Yeah. And it's important to me, because I don't want to lose this, is what it comes down to. So we're actually, we're going to go talk about that. We're going to train today. Guys, you're going to see this the few days after New Year's Day, but Victoria and I are going to train. And then after that, we're going to come home, eat some food, shower and stuff. And then we're going to go out for coffee, and we're going to have the same discussion you and I are having right now. Talk about what our goals are for 2020.
One thing we do, me and my wife, for some reason, I don't know why, but it just sort of becomes almost tradition, is we will end up in the hot tub tomorrow.
Oh, really? Nice.
And then we'll plan our year.
Nice. That'll be good for your foot, maybe? Get some circulation in there?
But we will plan our year. We do it all the time. We go in the hot tub and then we plan our year. One thing I do need to do, or I want to do, is I want to give my wife a little bit more this year.
That's a good one. I like that.
She's always supported me, and I try and keep balance, but you know what this industry's like.
Dave, I know what you're like. I know what you're like because I know what I'm like. That's it. I can relate to you because I understand things in you that I understand in myself, that you're an extreme person, so I get it.
And I do need to be a bit more efficient with the way I manage things, particularly my phone, as in putting it down and leaving it alone.
That's a it's a habit, right?
It's a habit, and it's also I generally want to help people. I mean there's clients on there that message you at all, because I've got an international client base,
yeah,
that message you at all sorts of stupid fucking times.
Yeah.
I had people message me on Christmas Day.
Oh, sure, of course.
Can I eat this? It's like, fuck off. But you can't say that, you know what I mean? You've got to, it's important to them, so you have to be there to support them. But I generally want to help people, and I don't want to not be there if someone messages me. And I do get it from time to time, where they're in a bad place and everything's going Pete Tongs and there's drugs at the back of it, and it's like, shit, what do I do? You know? I keep toying with the idea of actually saying what I think on Facebook for, say, a week, and just see how many people I can actually piss off.
Yeah.
You see people pop up in your feed, and you just think, you know, one day I'll tell you some home truths.
Ooh.
But that's probably not. But I've actually been going the other way. I've actually been removing people that I feel are fractious.
Yeah.
So whereas before I'd try and argue with people or try and balance their negativity, or if I saw someone that was putting out really shit information, I would constantly sort of be at the back of them trying to correct it.
Yeah. That's a nonstop thing. It's like chasing your tail. You'll never catch up.
Entirely unproductive, and I would have better impact of my time on just focusing on individuals rather. So these days, people like that just get blocked or unfriended or hidden. You know what I mean? And I just I have actively started to remove people off my Facebook that irritate me now.
No wonder I can't find you anymore. I looked for you today. I didn't see you.
No, you're blocked. You're gone. But it's stupid as it sounds. It's quite surprising how much stress relief that actually creates.
Yeah. Oh, no, dude. Absolutely it does, man. And it's needless.
I
just
realized how much it was winding me up.
Wow. Yeah. But
it winds me up because I'm passionate about what I do.
Yes. Yes.
It winds me up because I care about what I do. So when I see someone promoting bollocks.
Yeah.
I do take it almost personal, and I do get very invested in it, and I've just realized that that's counterproductive for my health.
Yeah.
Because I end up stewing over it.
Well, that's a great realization to have. It really is.
So I definitely, you find now my Facebook interaction is quite shit.
Okay.
So generally I use it for Messenger. I respond to tags. And I use it for advertising and promotional work and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't even put much about what I'm doing up on there now. I put odd bits here and there, but I don't really use it. Oh, I'll tell you what I have, what I am doing. Yes, I've been talking to a good friend of mine. You know Vicky Masita, don't you?
Of course I do. Yeah, she's great.
Well, Vicky approached me about doing a steroid course.
Okay.
So, like, a number of 1 hour or 1.5 hour Skype sessions.
Okay.
Educating a coach on steroids so that they at least would have an understanding and be able to interact with clients if clients came their way that were users.
Yeah.
So I do something very similar anyway.
Yeah, of course you do.
With various different organizations. So Vicky's my first customer.
Oh, cool.
And she's my guinea pig.
Okay.
So we're going to, I think, might even be Thursday, actually. We're going to do the very first session, which will be Reasons for Youth.
Excellent.
She's going to help me develop a plan.
Okay.
But it should look at being 7, maybe 8 hours long with some homework and stuff like that in it.
Okay. That's a great idea for you. I think that that's a perfect fit for what you already do.
So it'd be a 1 hour, 1.5 hour Skype session. You'd sign up. Obviously, you'd pay. I haven't fixed the price yet, but it won't be cheap. I'm telling you that.
Well, it's your time. It's a lot of time you're investing.
Well, I'm probably going to be looking at somewhere around the £400-£500 mark, which for some people they might say that's a fortune.
Okay.
But if you coach for a living,
then it could be very beneficial. Absolutely.
It could be very beneficial. Particularly if you're a fringe coach in that you're not really in the bodybuilding scene. And
though
Vicky is in the bodybuilding scene, she also does a lot of athletic people and stuff like that. So she has this more rounded client base.
Yeah, and she doesn't have her own personal education using steroids because she's natural, right?
Dirty, stinking natty, yeah. No, terrible.
Well, I think that's a great idea, Dave, and I'll look forward. And health-wise, you said you didn't meet your goals last year. Are you going to recommit to some health goals this year?
I'm not even going to insult you by saying, yeah, I'm going to go in the gym and I'm going to smash it.
All right.
Fuck knows. There is some mild intent there.
Okay. Well, I would like to see better that way, as your friend, you know, podcast, man, I care about you. And as your friend, I would just like to see you be healthy because I know that, you know, you've had issues from the past and stuff, and I'd hate to see those things take you down further, you know.
I am well aware I need to drop a good 50, 60 pounds.
Okay.
And I need to get my fitness up, and I need to get back in the gym properly. However, what I am struggling very, very much with at the moment is motivation. I've got a few things happening this year. Like I'm going to FIBO this year.
Oh, cool.
So I'm sort of trying to use that as a stick to beat myself with.
Yeah.
You know, you can't turn up at Thebo, the fucking home of mass monsters, and look like a sack of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
If nothing else, at least you need to be relatively leanish.
Yeah, you don't have to be huge anymore, Dave. You know?
No. I know that. So, yeah, I mean, I'd like to sit at somewhere around the 280 to 295, 300-pound mark and still be natural and be benching three plates for reps, shoulder pressing four for reps, squatting four for reps, you know, that sort of stuff.
That'd be
so
great.
So I'm not super strong, but I'm not an embarrassment when I train. So that's where I want to be and just be relatively mobile with it all. So, I mean, health-wise, obviously my kidneys are an ongoing issue. They're never going to sort themselves, but my heart is improving all the time. So we should see the end of that this year.
Excellent.
Next year, so we should see the end of that next year. Yeah.
Excellent.
But I'm just probably chill out a bit, I think is what I need to do.
Well, I'm all for that. Let's get out of here on that note for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Check out TrueNutrition.com, our sponsor, who has sponsored us for the whole year now. You can use our code ADVICES, great high-quality supplements, and, of course, go to crosslands.org.uk. Guys, we will see you soon. Happy New Year.
Bye.